Okay, good morning again, everyone. And we have been continuing in our series talking about having a renewed mind. And, you know, I've said this over and over and over again the past few years, but I think it kind of goes without saying that during our current climate in our country right now, with everything that's going on with the COVID-19 virus, it's pretty easy to accept the fact that we kind of have to have a renewed mind towards quite a few things, right? Everything is different. Schools are different. The way that churches are going about their business is different. The way that we're handling everything from the grocery store to how we speak to one another and say hi is different. It's a renewed mind. And it brings to mind this thing that has been kind of persisting. It's been on my mind a lot recently. The idea that, and I was sharing a little bit earlier right before we got started, that there's a doctor who I've been following. He deals with these different pandemics and these different viruses and diseases that travel all over the world and the impact that they have on people. And one of the things he was saying is that even after we have, and most people know that term now about, you know, flattening the curve. Well, even after we flatten the curve, he said, there's going to be a new normal that we're going to have to adjust to. Yeah, we're going to go back to being able to find hand sanitizer and toilet paper and water in the grocery stores at some point. But there are certain things that just frankly moving forward, there's going to be a new normal. It's very similar to how there was a time when people would go to airports and they would fly. And, you know, you go through, security checkpoints and things like that. But it was nothing like how it was after 9/11. And suddenly, going through security, you used to think, okay, if I get there, half hour, 45 minutes before my flight, I should be okay. Now, nobody takes that chance because they understand that I'm going to have to go through a little more security, right? And with new information, with new understanding, comes a very clear idea that things, even though we will go back to certain things that we've accepted as normal, some things are changed forever. Some things require us to adjust in a little bit of a different way. And what I want to do in talking about this renewed mind is look less outward and globally and widescreen, and I kind of want to narrow it just a little bit, narrow the lens a little bit so that we can focus on us, so that each individual can focus on themselves and think, how is my new normal going to change? Personally, what about my new normal is going to be different? And over the next few weeks, I want to focus on a particular individual. Most of us who've ever read the Bible, we know this name. We know who Paul of the New Testament was. We know a little bit about his story, but I want to look at him because Paul, he underwent several things multiple times that we can kind of appreciate a little bit better now than maybe we could before. You know, Paul was, if you go and you actually look at the New Testament, there's 77 books that are included in the New Testament. Many of them are letters. Of those 27, 13 of them are either written or ascribed to be written by Paul. They were secondhand. So that's half of them. And then the book of Acts, even though it was not written by him or ascribed to have been written by him by someone secondhand who took his writings, it was about so much of his life. So half of what we see in the New Testament can directly be linked back to the man we know of as the Apostle Paul. Now, one of the things very interesting about the Apostle Paul is that the Apostle Paul, he definitely made some adjustments in his life. He went from persecuting Christians. He went from being a Pharisee who had real problems with the changes and the adjustments that were being made to order, to becoming a Christian himself, to becoming a follower of Christ himself. And if that wasn't adjustment enough, there are several things, and this is what I want to focus on. There are several times when Paul was himself imprisoned. He himself was actually put in shackles and chains. He was beaten. He was locked up. Now, when we think of being locked up, we think of being in prison, it was very similar to what we might call house arrest, where there was one particular time where he wrote to the churches in Ephesus and the churches in Philippi, and he wrote actually a letter to a friend, a colleague of his. That's the book of Philemon, and we'll get into that in the upcoming weeks. But I want to focus on, in particular, some of the writing, some of the things he said when he wrote his letter to the church in Philippi. I want to look in the first chapter of Philippians today, and I want to look at what Paul was dealing with and how that can help us to deal with these changing times. The title of the sermon today is very simply house arrest. House arrest, because let's face it, you know, with everything that's going on with the coronavirus is spreading, you can't avoid it because it has adjusted so much of our life. It has changed so much of how we think of our own health and how we think of our community and our own work and what it means to have stability. Those things have been shaken and changed. And yet, one of the biggest things that we're dealing with, and especially for those of you who are at home watching this right now, you're literally thinking, man, I kind of feel like I'm under house arrest. Now, house arrest is actually the name of a show that's on Netflix. I've never seen it, so you might be thinking, why is he even pointing this? I know nothing about this show. It just came up when I looked up house arrest. And looking into, believe it or not, looking into Paul and understanding the context of his confinement. But house arrest is something that sometimes we can kind of feel like we're under right now. Where, you know, we just can't be free to roam and do what we want to do. And I've mentioned this in the past couple weeks. What do you do during that time? It's very uncomfortable to have your freedom taken away from you. It's very uncomfortable to have to adjust to being surrounded by just four walls and you just can't go and do what you were so used to doing. But this is what Paul was dealing with. And it wasn't because he went out and broke the law. He wasn't a hardened criminal. It wasn't for killing people. It wasn't for actually hurting people. It wasn't for doing anything that we would look at as criminal. But he was causing a disturbance. And there were things outside of his control. And as a result, he spent what is estimated to believe to be about 2.5 years. What was essentially house arrest, where he could not go where he wanted to go. He could not be free, and he was stuck in Rome. And I want to look at this, and I'm going to start in the book of Philippians chapter 1 and see how Paul dealt with this confinement by the letter that he wrote to the Philippian church. Starting in verse 3 of chapter 1, it says, I thank my God every time I remember you. In all my prayers for all of you, I always pray with joy because of you, your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ Jesus. It is right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart, and whether I am in chains or defending and confirming the gospel, all of you share in God's grace with me. God can testify how I long for all of you with the affection of Christ Jesus. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ, glory and praise of God. As he starts this letter, as he starts addressing these people, understand that as Paul's going along carrying the message of Christ, he's going and he's establishing these ministries and he's bringing people to the knowledge and understanding of Christ being the way to salvation. And there was no certainty that he was going to be able to ever go back and visit these people. There was no certainty that he was ever going to be able to go back and address these different congregations and groups that he started the work. And so he's pointing out to them that even though I'm in chains, even though I'm confined, even though I'm locked up, he was thinking about their well-being. He was thinking about what's going to best benefit them. He's thinking about them growing in their praise for being saved, for being those who have the truth, who know the message. His focus was increasingly more outward. Sometimes when we are in a situation like this where we're confined, when we're restricted, when we have uncertainty, like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to ever have the money that I used to, because like we saw last week, that's just what they report. They said there was over 3.5 million people, I believe it was, who filed for unemployment. And you know, I saw something as I was leaving the house this morning to come over where it said, and that was just last week, because frankly, some people just didn't get around to it because of other obligations and trying to tie up loose ends. There's going to be millions more this week. There's a lot of people who are facing uncertainty. But during that uncertainty, what should our mind be on? What should we be focused on as Christians? What should those of us who really know the goodness of God, who have been delivered, what should our focus actually be on? During times of difficulty and stress and uncertainty, it's important to have an outward and upward focus towards God. Not because we're just pie in the sky and we're not dealing with the realities of our situation, but the real question is, do we understand that God is involved even when he may not appear to be giving you the things that you want or the things that you enjoy? So much of our understanding and you know, popular Christianity out there is this idea that, hey, you know what, if I just give myself to God, if I just give my time, if I invest, if I just put myself in a place where I'm giving my best to God and I'm willing to follow in the example of Christ, that my life will be quantitatively and qualitatively better. And I say quantitatively and qualitatively because depending on how you measure it, sometimes we can look at our lives and think, well, how is God actually working to benefit me? How is God actually improving my life? Where is God in this situation where I'm not even sick? I haven't even done anything to get contaminated. I haven't hurt anybody else. I abide by the quarantine. I have several friends of mine. I have a friend of mine named Amina. And she was just upset. She's like, I just wish people would go sit down for the 2 weeks so we can get this over with, you know, because they talk about how the virus, like, you can seriously flatten the curve if you would just go sit down. And people just don't want to do it. And she's like, and it's a sad situation because for us, it's not even our fault. The people who are abiding by the regulations and doing what's necessary, we're being hassled. We're being restricted because so many other people won't do it. It can feel like, man, it's not my fault. This doesn't even involve me. Why am I having to be? I compare it to, and I shared this with someone, I compare it to back when I was in grade school. If you got a whole classroom full of kids and none of us get to go on recess because me and Mark got in a fight, right? So it's like everybody gets punished. And it's like, wait a minute, I couldn't stop him. I didn't start the fight. Why can't I go out on recess, you know? That's kind of what it's like. And when we have circumstances that we feel like are out of our control, that we can't do anything about it. Paul's like, I'm innocent. I didn't do anything to hurt anybody. I told the truth. I gave my life. I went from persecuting Christians to bringing people to Christ. But the outcome of that is now I'm in prison. Now I'm restricted. Now I'm in chains. And yet his focus was on, what can I do to strengthen the other Christians, the other disciples out there? I can't go to them. I can't talk to them directly. Technology didn't exist where he could actually be like we are, where we're doing things virtually and online and streaming and making phone calls and text. No, so he wrote a letter. But it wasn't just the writing of the letter. It was because his focus was on God. It was because his focus was on, what can I do to flatten the curve spiritually, if you will? What can I do to flatten the curve so that those who may be discouraged, those who may be in fear, those who may be lacking faith, they may be struggling, what can I do to help this church who also is facing persecution? What can I do to help my brothers and sisters? What can I do to help so that we can flatten the curve there so that spiritually they can grow? I talked about the new normal. We talked about house arrest. And when I think of house arrest, I know some of you are thinking, I'm not a criminal. I've never had to deal with it. Okay, this is what happens when you get put on house arrest. Okay, for those of you all can't see this, that is an ankle bracelet. Okay, this is an ankle bracelet. This is a monitor so that if you decide, you know what, I know I'm supposed to stay right here on my piece of land in my house, but if you go away without the permission of law enforcement, it will immediately let them know, okay, somebody's moving and they have no business. And they will come find you, right? And, you know, I found this cartoon to be a little funny because, you know, this is a guy, he's stuck. He says, man, you know, I'd just rather be in prison. You know, I'd rather be in prison. Because sometimes, you know, let's face it, there are people who are struggling. They're like, man, you know what, I'm stuck here and I'm not necessarily with people I want to be with. Like, I have several of my friends, we've talked about this. Now, I have to love my children and think that they're the greatest thing ever. And I love being around them all the time. But I have to admit, there have been a few moments. You know, once the questions start piling up, you know, the first 20 questions of the day are okay from Kendall. But by 11 o'clock in the morning, and I get to question number 21 and 22 and 23 and 830. At that point, it's like, man, you know what? I'd just rather go to the hospital. You know, because sometimes it can feel like that. I'd just rather just lock me up. Just get it over with. It's interesting because this lady, some of you probably can't see, they've even come up with fashion, like certain shoes that you can have to somehow conceal the fact that you got an ankle bracelet on. Like fashion becomes a thing because this has become normal for some people. And, you know, we make light of it, and it's kind of, you know, tongue-in-cheek here because none of us are actually on house arrest because of the virus. But the restrictions that we face, we have to adjust to those things. I want to look in Philippians in verse 12 of chapter 1 here and talk about part of this adjustment that we have to look internally and focus on how we're going to make this adjustment. Starting verse 12, it says, now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. I'm going to repeat that one more time. Now I want you to know, brothers and sisters, that what has happened to me has actually served to advance the gospel. This is about perspective. This is about understanding the perspective of what has happened, because sometimes we can look at the adjustments that we have to go through and we can forget why God is allowing these things to get done. Continuing on, it says, as a result, it has become clear throughout the whole palace guard and to everyone else that I am in chains for Christ. What he's saying there is, I'm not in chains because I did anything criminal. I'm not in chains because I actually hurt anyone. I'm in chains because I'm preaching Christ crucified. And because of my chains, most of the brothers and sisters have become confident in the Lord and dare all the more to proclaim the gospel without fear. It is true that some preach Christ out of envy and rivalry, but others out of goodwill. The latter do so out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former preach Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing that they can stir up trouble for me while I'm in chains. But what does it matter? The important thing is that in every way, whether from false motives or true, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. Yes, and I will continue to rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and God's provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, what has happened to me will turn out for my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I will in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now, as always, Christ will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far, but it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and I will continue with all of you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that through my being with you again, your boast of Jesus will abound on account of me. We see something very powerful here about the perspective that he has. We started there in verse 12 where he says, hey, guess what? I got news here. This is happening for a reason. I understand that this is happening for a reason. And believe it or not, people, guess what? The new normal, this shift, this thing that we're going through, it's actually happening so that the gospel can be advanced. Sometimes we need a shake up. You know, I talked about how after 9/11, all the security changed at the airports and the different ports and the different points of entry into this country. Security changed. You know, they created, you know, Homeland Security, all these different functions of the government. Suddenly things changed. Guess what? They needed to change. They needed to shift. You know, there's so many churches that have begun to see the need for electronic communication. For, you know, everybody, you know, I do IT for a living outside of ministry. And so there are people who they want apps. They now see the need to have apps to be able to communicate with different people, to be able to share the gospel with different people, to make sure that they have websites and electronic presence out there. That's just one example. But guess what? There are some who, they were kind of resistant to that. You know, they were a little bit old-fashioned and said, I don't know if I feel too comfortable with that. And suddenly, the new normal says, guess what? I need to understand that everybody that I may want to reach can't be reached. Because, you know, that attitude of, well, if they really wanted to hear the word of God, if they really want to be part of the body, they'll show up to the building. Instead of understanding that, no, you have to make yourself accessible and reach out. And you have to be willing to do it at great cost. Not financial cost, but at great cost to yourself. Paul was doing this uncertain if he would even live. It's been believed and thought that he was concerned that he may, part of the reason why he's writing it this way is, I may not live, I may get executed and never see you again. Do we have the same attitude? He even points out, he says, you know, there are people since I've been locked up who are taking advantage of the fact that I'm not free to roam about and do the work of the Lord in person, and they're taking advantage of this by going out And he calls some of them false teachers, and they're out there for their own selfish gain. He says, but as long as they're preaching Christ, as long as they're teaching it the right way, I rejoice. Because I'm not concerned about their motives. God will judge their motives. God will judge their intentions. My concern is that the word is getting out. See, what happens is during a time like now when people are getting sick and people are afraid, it can be very easy to be cynical and think to yourself, man, you know what? This is terrible. This is awful. No, guess what? People are suddenly looking at their mortality. They're suddenly considering, you know what? Maybe I need to get right. And you say, well, hey, you're only interested in God. You're only interested in your relationship with God because you're afraid somebody's going to sneeze or cough on you and then you might, you know, get this virus and be stuck in the hospital. Does it really matter why? Do we have a heart that is concerned more with people's motives and why they're preaching or why they're suddenly interested in God? Or do we understand that, you know what? What matters is that people are thinking about what it means to be a man or a woman of God rather than the motives and how it's going about getting done, the vehicle. We must always remember to consider how our circumstances fit into advancing God's plan. Very often, we can be so focused on ourselves and how things are impacting us that we lose sight of the fact that the circumstances that we have are actually impacting God's plan in a totally different way. Paul talks about how because of him being in chains, he now has the opportunity to share Christ to the point that all those people, he talked about the palace guard, he talked about all those people around him, suddenly now they're hearing the message. Suddenly now they're being exposed to it in a way that they otherwise would not have been. There are limitations to your movement. There are limitations to how we can connect and communicate with one another. Do we see that as a part of God's plan? And now suddenly you have the time. Suddenly now you have the resources to be able to reach people that you otherwise would not have the time or the resources to be able to reach. I find it interesting that all these letters, because, you know, writing people letters have kind of gone out of style. I used to be a big letter writer back in the 80s and 90s. I would write, you know, I would write my grandmother letters and stuff, and then I would write different girls I knew letters. And, you know, I was a big letter writer, right? And then I kind of got away from it. And then I met my wife. I got back into letter writing again, you know. Like, it's amazing how when things are taken away from you, when you can't call them or maybe you can't be in front of them face to face, suddenly if you really want it bad enough, you'll get creative. You'll figure out something. Paul couldn't reach these people directly, but he found a way to communicate. Not only communicate to them, but these letters were sustained and preserved to the point where we can see the heart that he had all of these centuries later. What has this shift, what has this change done? How has it affected you and your perspective to see that, you know what, these circumstances and the way my life is set up now has changed me, but has it changed you to understand that it's because God's plans for you may have shifted? His plan for you may have changed. How are you adjusting to those things and continuing to look at how, okay, maybe God wants me to advance the gospel this way? Paul gives a great perspective on that. You know, part of the changes and the shifts, not for me, this isn't much of a change, but I know a lot of people are having to work from home because some of your employers said, nope, I don't care what the government does, you're going to keep working, okay? You will not get time off. My wife is one of those people where they said, nope, figure it out. They didn't even give them a whole lot of structure. They said, figure it out. Zoom or Facebook Live, whatever you got to do, you need to still treat your patients. You still need to deal with your clients. And so her and her colleagues are working together and they're divvying up the work, but they're working from home. Now, this is similar to how working home looks for me sometimes, right? You know, because that's really the issue with working from home for so many people. They're trying to find workspaces within their maybe two-bedroom apartment or their little townhome or their small house. They're trying to figure out not how can I work from home. Most people have technology that would allow it if they have a smartphone at the very least. But then it's like, well, what do I do with the kids? You know, there's all kinds of commercials out there that they were all funny about 2-3 months ago. Now they're not so funny because now you're experiencing it where the guy, he's trying to have this business meeting and he closes big deal and all of a sudden his kids start walking into the view of the camera. This is the new normal. I found myself locking the office door more often than I used to now because suddenly the kids are home all the time. We have to adjust in that way. But this is the reality. We now have different workspaces. As Christians, we now have different workspaces. It calls us to have to work and function in a different way. It's not so easy to just say, well, you know what? I'll just, you know, call them or I'll just go stop by their house. You have to encourage people a different way. I think of the secret sister thing that we do here in this church where, you know, the sisters, the brothers need to start doing this too, by the way. I need some encouragement personally. But we'll worry about that after the virus, after we flatten the curve. But the sisters, they have the secret sister thing where they have these names that they draw and they come up with ways to encourage one another. And so they'll get them a small gift or they'll write them a card. They'll give them a gift. They'll do something to encourage them, but they don't know who it's coming from. They just know something about them. And so then they'll tell, hey, go back in, you know, the bathroom, the little shelf back there. They'll get their thing and it'll have their name on it. Well, guess what? Now nobody's coming to the building because there are so many people who can't. It would be dangerous for them to do it. How will the Secret Sister program continue without people being able to physically show up? Think about, you know, the fact that, you know, even though so many of us are maybe financially strapped because our work has changed, especially those who don't have the security of having salaried positions or you can't work from home and telecommute and things like that. What do you do when your finances are limited? Do you still give? You know, for a long time, I've been talking about how, hey, it's very secure, it's all encrypted, everything's done in a very secure fashion, but we have online giving. Guess what? People are still calling the church needing food, needing other resources, needing help financially to cover bills and groceries and things like that. When we give, it's not just to keep the lights on here. Actually, that's a very small fraction, a very small part of what the church does. So much of what the church does, so much of what I do in my position is serving people inside in the community, serving people here. Are we still giving? Do we have a commitment to giving even though we have to do it a different way? Are we willing to say, hey, you know what? I don't really want to be close to people, but guess what I'll do? I'll drop it off. I'll run by and I'll drop it off. I'll make sure that it gets in. Because I understand the need for these things to happen, even though it has to be done a different way. Do we have that heart and that attitude that says, guess what? Maybe this new normal is for very good reason, because my conscience needs to be pricked just a little bit so that I can understand the need differently than I did before. I'm going to close it out here in Philippians Chapter 1, verse 27 through 30, it says, whatever happens, conduct yourself in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. Then, whether I come and see you or only hear about you in my absence, I will know that you stand firm in the one spirit, striving together as one for the faith of the gospel without being frightened in any way by those who oppose you. This is a sign to them that they will be destroyed, but that you will be saved, and that by God. For it has been granted to you on behalf of Christ, not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for him, since you are going through the same struggle you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. He talks about suffering. He talks about pain. He talks about this discomfort that he's experiencing. And he says, in sharing in this, there's something very important about this. And if we have the right perspective, if we just look, instead of looking at all the problems that this change, shift is causing, if we look at it, we can see it from a different lens. We can see that if we're understanding it from God's perspective, it should actually draw us closer together, even though we are more and more separated, because we have unity. They were going through persecution. They were all, you know, it's interesting, and I'll get into this a little bit more next week. But what you find here is that many of the Christians back then, they weren't considered Jewish anymore, even though they grew up Jewish, even though that was their culture, because Jews kind of felt like, you know what? No, they're not really one of us. But they certainly weren't Gentiles. They certainly weren't Greeks and Romans. They were themselves kind of all by themselves. Not only all isolated in a physical sense, but very much so, they were isolated in society because people looked at them and thought, they're kind of weird. While everybody else is running, as I said before, while everybody else is running out of the building, they're running in. While everybody else is fearful and scared, they're praying, they're drawing on God. They're saying, God is going to deliver us, and we have faith. We know who Christ is. We know where our salvation comes from. That unity should be what marks us. And how do we go about promoting that unity even when we are separated during this time? Suffering for the name of Christ is a sign that we're united with him in his spirit. His spirit is what makes us brothers and sisters. It's what brings us together. It's what binds us together. How committed are we to that unity? How much does it matter that we go above and beyond to make sure that nothing stands in the way of that unity? Not even persecution, not even suffering, not even being in pain and uncomfortable and inconvenienced. How much do we care about being united with our brothers and sisters and with Christ? You know, my wife, she posted it this morning, and I loved it. I wanted to share. It says, even in the midst of my storm, I see God working it out for me. Do we see God working it out for me? Do you see how God, because of the shift, because of the adjustments, do you see how God's working it out for you? There are so many times, you know, I shared this last week, there are so many times you say, I wish I could be able to help someone, but I don't know enough about this particular subject, and I really haven't been able to invest the time into reading, into understanding, or I really haven't been able to put in the time to learn about this particular person or group or thing. And now you have the time. Not only now do you have the time, but the people who you would need to help you along the way, now they have the time. Do we actually see that during what many of us are looking at and thinking, wow, this is a storm, this is some trouble, this is a real inconvenience, this is a real problem for me and my life functionally, do we see God working it out? Do we have that perspective even when there's trouble? A few questions I want to end with here for us to think about moving forward. Do I see God's plan at work even when things around me are changing and uncomfortable? Do we see how God's plans are at work? Like Paul said, even though I'm sitting here and I'm in chains and I'm restricted, I see how this is working not only to your benefit, but the overall benefit of God's message through Christ being advanced. Do we see how this can be, as I've said for the past few weeks, an opportunity for us as Christians to be able to not just tell people, but show people what it means to have real faith in him? Does my outlook allow me to continue to press forward with the work of God, or am I stifled by my conditions? I ask it in this way because, let's face it, sometimes we can get paralyzed by fear and uncertainty. And instead of moving forward, we freeze. We get stuck. All we do is watch the news. All we do is see the numbers going up, and more people are getting sick, and more testing is done, and more people are diagnosed, and more deaths. Instead of seeing that, you know what? Even through all of that, I'm going to continue to press forward. Because what, like Paul said, whether I'm dead and this thing kills me, or whether I continue to live, I know that God has a plan in it. That God is able to work in it. Do we have that level of faith? Do we understand our circumstances in that way? Is that our outlook? How should I be responding right now to the new normal that is evolving? Do I resist the change that is necessary, or am I embracing it as an opportunity for me to grow? How are you adjusting to this new normal? I'm not saying that everybody should sit down and start writing letters to all the different churches and friends that they have, but how are you adjusting? Because here's what's going to happen. Once we get on the other side of this, there are some things that will stay just like they are right now. Are you going to have a different outlook? And is that going to continue? Are you going to go back to being, let's just call it, are you going to go back to being this stale and lazy and a Christian who lacks creativity? Suddenly, now that there's no longer a well-known global pandemic that is striking everybody on the planet, are you going to suddenly go back to, you know, kind of feeling like, well, I'm a little bit relaxed now. I'm a little comfortable now. Because that's the real danger. What we see in Paul's writings to the church in Philippi is that he understood the magnitude, the gravity of the situation. He understood that people still need to hear the message, even though I'm locked up. Do we really understand the gravity of the situation? And will that continue long after there's toilet paper back on the shelves? Long after there's water to be found in bottles? Long after, well, there's still soap. Nobody bought all the soap. But when there's hand sanitizer again, when everything goes back to where we don't have to be panicked and scared that we're not going to be able to find meat in the frozen section of the grocery store, when we go back to that, is your heart still going to have the same urgency and understand the gravity of the situation? Are we going to keep a new normal mindset, or are we going to go back longing, frankly, for the way things were? Because, frankly, we shouldn't want to go back to that. God has put us in a position where, guess what? It may seem like the focus and the attention of the world is on what the government's going to do and whatever. No, this is an opportunity where the spotlight is shined on real Christians to show who God actually is. Show me who your God is. Show me where your faith lies. Are you going to go back to hiding and being comfortable again? Or is this new normal going to be the way that your life is moving forward? And finally, in what way can I redefine suffering both for myself and for others so that God may be seen and glorified? And this is so much, and speaking just to Americans, this is so much of the problem. Not only just the human condition, but we do not believe in suffering. We do everything we can not to suffer, right? We do not want to suffer, even if it's going to help other people. That's part of the reason why nobody will shelter in place and nobody will go sit down. I don't want to be inconvenienced, even if I know it's going to help everybody else stay healthy. I don't want to have to stay home. I want to go to Mardi Gras. I want to go to the beach. It's a nice day outside. I want to go out. I want to go to the mall. I'm angry that I have to suffer. How are we going to redefine that and understand that this is what God is calling for us as his followers, as Christ's disciples? This is what he's expecting of us in this moment and moving forward. if you would like the prayers of the church, if you're in a place where you would like to ask the church, come forward publicly and ask the church for prayers and help. If you're online and you want to request, please go to the site. Reach out to us, contact us, and let us know. At this time, would you please stand as we sing our song of invitation?